Yes, that.
Sure. That easy? Said Nim.
Theo shrugged.
I helped build Jason's networks and firewalls.
Nim whistled. No wonder he wanted you dead.
Jason jumped down from the truck and headed for the front of the caravan, pausing beside the second Humvee.
Alia will be in there, Diana said. They'll take second position on the drive in case of ambush. I can get to her.
You sure? Said Theo. Those are a lot of soldiers all juiced up on hero blood.
I can get to her, Diana repeated, hoping that was true. She would have only one chance at this.
But we need to get you to the lab truck. Jason said he had snipers in place, and I doubt he'll have them stand down until the caravan is in motion.
Nim pointed to a spot near the crest of the Menelaon, then left and right at the lower ridges.
They'll be there, she said. What do you know about snipers? Asked Theo.
Nothing, but I know plenty about sightlines. Those are the three spots that will give them direct views of the caravan and anyone approaching from either side of the road.
That's remarkable, said Diana. Can you pick out a path to follow that will get us to the lab truck without drawing their fire?
Nim cocked her head. I can get us there, but not without the guys in Pinon's Humvee seeing us.
Then that's our first stop, said Diana. Nim, take the lead. Let's move.
They dropped into a crouch and crept along the side of the road, following Nim's directions, using the brush and trees as cover. Nim's zigs and zags as they approached the vehicle seemed counterintuitive to Diana, but she could admit she didn't have Nim's particular gift for the visual. They emerged from the brush, wriggled directly under one of the armored trucks, and then crawled along its opposite flank. From there, they slid into a wide pocket of shadow by the driver's side of the Humvee.
Stay close, she said, and yanked open the driver's door.
Before the stunned soldier could say a word, she'd pulled him from the vehicle and slammed him against the Humvee's side. He dropped to the pavement.
Hey, said the soldier in the passenger seat, his hand on his radio.
She slid into the car, seized the scruff of his shirt, and cracked his head against the dashboard. He slumped forward. Diana looked behind her. The rear of the Humvee held two large cages. Pinon lay in one, curled on her side and snoring. She picked up the handheld radio and slipped back out of the Humvee. Nim and Theo were rolling the driver's unconscious body beneath the vehicle.
Nim, said Diana, get us to the lab truck.
In a few quick steps, they were there. Diana threw the back doors open and leapt inside. The man at the computer station scrambled away, fumbling for the gun at his hip. Diana yanked it from its holster and held it easily out of his reach. He raised his hands.
Please, I'm a scientist.
I'm not going to hurt you. She saw his hand creeping toward a yellow panic switch and brought the butt of the pistol down on his head.
Much.
She waved Theo and Nim inside and shut the doors behind them.
Keep an eye on him, she said. If anyone realizes you're here...
Nim snatched a semi-automatic rifle from the wall.
We'll be ready.
Theo was already bent over the computer, his fingers flying over the keyboard. A machine was whirring at the workstation, row after row of glass test tubes filling with dark red blood, then shifting left so another row could be filled.
Oh, hell, said Nim. Is that your blood?
Diana narrowed her eyes. She scanned the mini armory in the truck and pointed to a row of incendiary grenades.
When Theo is done, I want you to get clear. Then blow this truck and the vehicle with Pinon in it.
Can you do that?
Yes, said Nim.
Her answer was a little too quick and a little too confident for Diana's liking.
Without blowing yourselves up?
Possibly, said Theo.
The radio crackled.
We are ready to move out. Collins, remain in position until the site has been cleared. Over.
They stared at the black box. The voice sounded again.
Collins, do you copy?
Theo snatched up the radio, fumbling it clumsily, then pressed a button and said,
Copy that, pal. See you back at base. Over.
Theo put the radio aside and returned to his work. Diana grabbed a short sword and a shield from the racks.
I don't understand, said Nim. All the swords and stuff. Are Jason's soldiers really tough enough to go up against bullets and bombs?
He's going to deploy EMPs, said Theo. He pointed to the screen, where a long string of texts scrolled by. Diana's confusion must have shown because he continued. An electromagnetic pulse. It's not much different from lightning, just a lot bigger. It will disable all major weapons systems. No nukes, no missiles, no access to weapons stockpiles. A fair fight, murmured Diana. I wanted to remake the world. Sure, said Theo, if you've been taking your hero blood vitamins. The Corallus Foundation has footholds all over the world. He's going to throw us back to the Stone Age. The Bronze Age, corrected Nim. Was dying once today not enough for you? Said Theo. Diana touched each of them on the shoulder, hoping they could get along well enough to manage this task. Stay quiet and stay safe, she whispered, heading for the doors. And lock up behind me. Diana, said Nim, kick Jason's ass. She frowned, confused. Specifically his ass?
Yeah.
Why? Without looking up from the keys, Theo said, New York tradition. Diana nodded and cracked the doors. She edged outside. The last of the day's sunlight cast long shadows across the road. She'd hoped to be able to sneak up on Jason's vehicle, but there was no time for stealth. The caravan was already moving. Diana broke into a run. Instantly she heard gunfire. She kept her shield up, hearing bullets ping against the metal. She sprinted ahead, slipping alongside the last truck in the caravan, keeping pace with it and using it for cover. She heard voices shouting and saw the lead cars put on speed as the truck beside her screeched to a halt. She couldn't afford to wait to see what emerged from it. She raced ahead and dove for the back of the Humvee, seizing the base of its metal bumper, using one hand to keep her shield above her, and the other to lift the vehicle's back end off the ground. The Humvee's front wheels spun as it tried to surge forward. Diana gave a grunt of effort and planted her feet. A bullet struck her left thigh. Another struck her calf, the pain coming in bright shocks that jolted through her body. She glanced behind her and saw soldiers pouring out of the other truck, racing toward her with guns drawn. They were far enough away that their weapons weren't doing much damage, but she couldn't maintain this position. Diana sucked in a breath and flung her shield at them in a sweeping arc. She let go of the Humvee. It roared forward on a burst of speed. With a running leap, she sprang onto its back, charging up and over the roof. Gunfire exploded around her, the bullets striking her body in a painful hail. She ignored them and launched herself off the Humvee's hood, directly into its path. She rolled into a somersault, came up standing, and barely had time to plant her feet and turn, hands held out before her. The Humvee barreled into her, driving her backward, her sandals sliding over the pavement. The force of the impact quaked up her palms and she gritted her teeth, bracing her shoulders as the Humvee's engine roared. She heard footfalls, soldiers running toward her. How many? 10? 20? More? How fast were they? How strong? Could she fight them all? Diana looked to the west. The sun had turned a fiery red as it drew closer to the hills. How long did she have until it set completely? How long until darkness fell and their last chance vanished? Chapter 30. When a voice came over the radio declaring, Sir, we have an incoming hostile, Jason didn't seem remotely concerned. Local law or big guns? Neither, sir, it's that girl. Alia sat up straighter, the plastic zip ties around her wrists digging into her flesh. Girl? Jason said, craning his neck as gunfire exploded behind them. Alia was afraid to look, afraid to hope, but she made herself turn. Diana, sprinting through a torrent of bullets, her shield raised above her head, she leapt forward and seized the rear bumper of the Humvee. That isn't possible, Jason said, his brow lowered as if he was trying to solve a particularly difficult equation. Pinon drained her. No one can survive that. Men were descending on Diana, drawing closer, the gunfire growing louder. She hurled her shield at them and released the Humvee, but a moment later Alia heard footsteps on the roof, and in the next second Diana was standing in the Humvee's path. Take her down, said Jason. The driver gunned the engine, and Alia screamed. They struck Diana head-on, the impact throwing Alia forward against her seatbelt. But Diana hadn't moved. She was planted in the road, her lips drawn back over her teeth, her hands braced against the Humvee's crossbar. "My God," Jason said, peering through the windshield, admiration in his voice. "Look at her." He didn't sound scared. Alia wanted him to sound scared.
"Sir?" said the driver, unsure of himself.
"I want the protoguard. Swords and shields, no guns. Oh, and tell them to try and keep her alive, if they can."
How could he talk this way? As if this was a game, no, an experiment, and he couldn't wait to record the outcome.
The soldier communicated the order over the radio, and in seconds Alia saw a wave of men flanking Diana as the Humvee's wheels whirred.
"These are my finest soldiers," Jason said. "They've been blessed with the strength of the greatest heroes to ever walk this earth, but they've never faced a challenge like Diana."
Alia glared at him.
"They're no match for her."
"Maybe not," Jason acknowledged, "but they'll make quite a mess of her while we wait for the sun to set."
Fresh fury spiked through her. She pulled futilely at her cuffed hands. Diana was here, back from the dead, and Alia could do nothing to help her. She wanted to scream. All of this power inside her, an apocalypse waiting to be born, and what use was it to her?
"I wish we could stay to watch her fight," Jason said as his proto-guard advanced with swords and spears and nets.
"Why do they have nets, Jason?" she asked, though she wasn't sure she wanted to know.
"I was short-sighted before."
"Okay," he admitted with a small, painfully Jason shrug.
"I was overeager. I shouldn't have had Pinon drain her dry. Alive, she'll provide me with a permanent supply of genetic material to work from."
Something dark tore loose in Alia. Jason might not be right about their parents, but he wasn't totally wrong either. Her whole life she'd been told to be careful, to keep her voice low, to make sure she only drew the right kind of attention. Stay calm, don't give them a reason, don't ever give them a reason. But she'd had a right to her anger then, and she had a right to it now. And what had being careful gotten her anyway? There had to be justice for Theo, for Nim, for all the pain Jason had caused. Careful wasn't going to get it. Nemesis, goddess of retribution. She heard the beat of wings and recoiled, thinking of Eris. But this sound came from within her, the rustle of something that had slept for too long. Haptandra, the hand of war. What if she were the one to reach for this power? "I am done being careful. I am done being quiet. Let them see me angry. Let them hear me wail at the top of my lungs." The sleeping thing stretched its wings, black and glossy, lit by dark fire. It rose, a dagger in its hand. Nemesis. What if this power wasn't only a curse but a gift, something unwieldy and dangerous, passed from a goddess to her daughter and on, something that longed to be used? What if it could be a weapon in Alia's hand? She closed her eyes and reached toward that dark, winged thing. She grabbed hold, fastening it to her, so that she was only anger now. Alia could almost feel the shift of wings between her own shoulder blades, and there was no fear, only a vibrant surety. This is mine. This is my right. She nudged at the power inside her and felt it take flight. The soldier in the passenger seat lifted his radio and smashed it into the driver's head. Jason flinched back as the driver turned on his attacker, and they began to grapple in the front seat.
"Sholas!"
Jason shouted as the driver took his foot off the pedal and the Humvee decelerated.
"Chihara! What the hell are you doing?"
Alia opened her eyes, saw the ring of soldiers. She reached toward her power, and this time, she shoved. Suddenly, the soldiers outside were screaming, shouting, their swords clanging as they turned on one another.
"Damn it," said Jason. "This must be because we're so close to sunset."
"Yeah," said Alia. "That must be it."
"Do,"
Jason began, then shouted as the Humvee tilted forward and the front of the vehicle hit the road with a loud metallic clang.
"What the—"
"I think she took the front tires off." The Humvee's rear sank with a sudden thunk. "And those would be the back tires,"
Where is she? He said, turning in his seat.
She's coming for you.
Alia looked through the windows and smiled at the havoc she had made. It was only the beginning.
We're coming for you.
Don't look so pleased, Alia, Jason said, and she could see only frustration in him. No terror, no worry. If anything, he looked almost eager as he drew a long sword from the Humvee's main compartment. This fight is just starting. He threw the door open, blade gleaming in his hand. Chapter 31. Diana cast the last of the tires away, in time to see Jason crawl from the box that had been the Humvee and launch himself to his feet. He was armed with a sword and paused only to snatch a shield from the inert arm of one of his fallen men. There was no time to survey the chaos around her, to worry if, back in the lab truck, Theo and Nim would succumb to this battle madness too. The soldier closest to Diana had knocked his compatriot to the ground and was slamming his shield against his opponent's face. Diana seized it on the upswing and cracked it once across the soldier's head. He dropped forward, cheek to cheek with his comrade. She faced Jason now. They were ringed by fighting men. The other truck had driven off the road. Diana tested the weight of the sword in her hand. It was fairly short, but its shape would make it good for both cutting and thrusting. Though the steel was of average quality, the blade seemed sharp enough.
"Your men aren't coming to your rescue," she said.
Jason rolled his shoulders. "I don't need a rescue."
"You already lost to me once on the way up the mountain.
Let's say I let you believe what you wanted to believe." Diana shook her head, realizing he'd feigned his fatigue on that starlit peak.
"You lie as easily as you breathe. Always you held back."
"Well then," she said, "let's see what your best looks like against an Amazon." They circled each other slowly, but Jason had no reason to wait to assess her strengths. He'd been doing that for days. He lunged. Their swords met, clashed, the sound of steel against steel ringing off the hillside. Diana felt the force of the blow all the way up her arm. He was strong and knew how to use his weight. They drew apart, blades sparking. He attacked and Diana parried, spinning left, keeping her shield up as he made a fresh jab at her ribs. "Strong," she noted, "but also used to being the strongest player on the field." He slammed his shield into hers, expecting her to fall back. Instead, she shoved, sending him flying. He crashed into the side of one of the trucks, but was on his feet in the blink of an eye. He shook off the pain of the impact and smiled. "The soldiers I am going to build from your blood." "Not if Theo can help it," she thought as Jason rushed at her, his sword glinting like a flash of lightning in a bank of clouds. He moved in a flurry, swiping and thrusting, driving her backward. She shifted her weight, returning each blow. It was startling, strange. How many hours had she spent preparing for such a moment? And yet this was nothing like the drills or sparring matches in the training rooms of the armory, because now her opponent was prepared to deal a killing blow.
"You're fast," she noted.
Jason smiled, and the dimple that had charmed her so easily appeared. "You're not just fighting me," he said, his breathing even. "You're fighting the warriors who defeated the Amazons. Achilles, who bested Penthesilea. Telamon, who brought low Melanippe. Hercules, who defeated Hippolyta." He hated hearing her sister's names, her mother's name, on his lips. Diana raised a brow. "A wise warrior learns from her mistakes." She adjusted her stance. "And you're forgetting who taught me to fight." She brought her sword down in a furious arc. Jason raised his shield to block the blow, but stumbled. Diana kicked out with her right foot, driving her heel into his solar plexus and knocking the wind from his lungs. This time he did not rise so quickly. She descended on him with every bit of skill she'd learned, the echo of her sister's teachings reverberating through her movements, the lessons they'd learned and passed down to her. Jason returned the blows, but his movements had slowed. He was still feeling the force of her kick, struggling to catch his breath. She slashed and he pivoted right, avoiding the strike, but she'd never intended to make contact. She checked her attack, changing direction, and brought her blade down in a swipe against his shield arm. He hissed as blood bloomed along his skin. She took the opening and brought the hilt of her sword down swiftly on his shield, knocking it free of his hand. It hit the ground with a dull clang. Diana changed her grip and swept her blade hard right, batting his sword away. He scrambled backward, his left arm dripping blood. He looked less frightened than confused, as if he couldn't quite fathom where his weapons had gone. "No," he said. "This is all wrong. Achilles, Hercules, they won. In all the stories, they best the Amazons. They are the victors."
"Those are the stories your poets tell, not mine. Surrender, Jason Corrales."
Jason growled his frustration, circling left. "Did Menelaus surrender when Paris stole his bride? I know you aren't willing to deal a killing strike."
"You can't win. Only my sisters can match me in fair combat."
A fevered look came into his eyes. "Then put aside your weapons, fight me hand to hand, best me and take your victory."
Would that end this? Give him the defeat in honest combat he sought?
She doubted it. Diana shrugged, tossed her sword and shield far out of reach. Jason sighed and shook his head. "So honest, so righteous." His lips curved, the beginnings of a smile sharp as a knife blade. "So easy to dupe. Only your sisters can match you?" He drew a syringe from his pocket. "Then you will fall to the might of the Amazons." She remembered what he'd said on the banks of the Eurotas. "I began building a serum from your DNA the first day we met."
Her cells. Her strength.
"No!" Diana cried. He jammed the needle into his thigh and depressed the plunger, then tossed the empty syringe aside. Jason straightened, cracked his neck. His grin widened. Diana took a step back. "The sun sets," said Jason, flexing his fingers as if testing the feel of his new strength. "An age of heroes begins, and I believe I promised you a beautiful death." He advanced and Diana retreated, eyeing him warily. "There's nowhere to run now." "I wonder," he said, his hands forming fists, "how it will feel to be brought low by strength born of your own blood." He swung left. Diana dodged the blow. He came up hard right, a hook to her gut with tremendous force. Diana grunted as his fist landed. Jason released a woof of air and drew back, startled. He shook it off and lunged at her. She pivoted, intending to wrap her ankle around his and use his own momentum to bring him down. But he was faster now. He halted his motion, seized her shoulders and twisted, hurling her to the ground. He grunted as if he were the one who'd been thrown on his back, whirled as if expecting to find someone behind him. Diana rocked backward and sprang to her feet. Jason threw himself at her, unleashing a flurry of punches and driving elbows. She bobbed left, right, landed a punch to his gut. He drove the palm of his hand upward in a strike to her chin. Diana's neck snapped back. The metallic tang of blood filled her mouth. Jason reeled away, holding his hand to his jaw as if he'd been struck. He touched his fingers to his mouth, but there was no blood there. His eyes were wide and wild. "What is this?" Diana licked the blood from her lip. Now she was the one to smile. "This is what it means to be an Amazon. My pain is theirs, and theirs is mine. Each wound you deal will be one you suffer yourself." "But it's not just the..." Jason shook his head as if trying to clear it. He took a step toward her, stopped. "What is that sound?"
"Come, Jason, strike me. Grant me the beautiful death you promised.
But with each blow, you will feel the agony of every Amazon fallen in battle. In each attack, you will hear the chorus of their screams." Jason clapped his hands to his ears. "Make it stop!"
"I can't."
He lurched forward, dropped to his knees. "Make it stop!" he screamed. "Don't you hear it? Don't you feel it?"
"Of course," said Diana. "Every Amazon bears the suffering of her sisters, lives with it, and learns to endure it. It's why we value mercy so highly."
It was what helped them remember that despite their greater strength, their speed, their skill, the promise of glory was nothing in the face of another's anguish. Diana crouched down and took Jason's chin in her fingers, forcing him to meet her gaze. If you cannot bear our pain, you are not fit to carry our strength.
You meant to do this, he hissed. You tricked me.
It was true. Jason knew she would not kill him, and she had known he would never surrender without the hero's death he so longed for.
Let's say I let you believe what you wanted to believe.
Kill me, Jason yelled. You can't leave me like this.
You haven't earned an honorable death, neither a beautiful one nor a quiet one. Live in shame instead, Jason Corrales, unmourned and unremembered.
You'll remember me, he panted, his face sheened with sweat. I was your first kiss. I could have been your first everything. You'll always know that.
She looked deep into his eyes. You were my first nothing, Jason. I am immortal, and you are a footnote. I will erase you from my history, and you will vanish, unremembered by this world.
Jason gave a high, keening shriek, his entire body shuddering. He slumped over on his side, curling into himself like a child, and wrapped his arms over his head, rocking back and forth, his howls of rage becoming sobs. She heard a loud boom and saw a spurt of flame rise from where she'd left Theo and Nim at the lab truck. A second later, another explosion sounded. Pinon's cage. Diana gave Jason one swift kick in the ass, as was tradition, then yanked the door from an armored truck and wrapped it tightly around him. That would hold him for a short while at least. She glanced over her shoulder. The sun was about to set. They had only a few minutes left, and the spring was almost a quarter mile away. She raced to the Humvee and threw open the passenger door.
What did you do to him? Alia asked when she heard her brother crying inside his metal cocoon.
Diana snapped the plastic bands binding her wrists.
Nothing, she said. He did it to himself.
She turned her back to Alia.
Now get on.
This time there was no argument. Alia leapt onto her back, and they were running toward the spring. Chapter 32. Alia held tight to Diana's neck, taking in the chaos she'd unleashed, trying to forget the sounds of Jason's whimpers as they sprinted toward the spring. Had Theo and Nim survived, too? How much time did they have left? Branches struck her cheeks as they clambered down the slope to the river, racing along its sandy banks.
What if we're too late? Alia panted, unsure why she was out of breath.
We won't be. But what if we are?
I don't know, Diana said, unslinging her as they neared the plane tree. I guess we just keep fighting.
Together. They splashed into the shallows of the riverbed, the water growing deeper as they plunged toward the spring. Around her, Alia heard the chorus building once more, girls' voices multiplying as she sank waist-deep in the water, stumbling over slick stones, soaked sneakers searching for purchase on the river's sandy bottom. She saw Eris high above them, heard her horrid screeching, saw the twins in their chariots racing along the riverbanks, both of them laughing, shrill and victorious. Too late. Too late. As the sun sank below the horizon, Alia hurled herself into the shining waters of the spring. She plunged beneath the surface, and the world went dark and silent. The water was far deeper than she'd expected, the cold like a hand sliding closed around her. Her feet kicked, but she could feel nothing beneath her. She was no longer sure which way she was facing or where the surface might be. There was only darkness all around. She could feel that winged thing inside her, thrashing, but she couldn't tell if it was fighting to keep hold or to break free. Don't go. The thought came unbidden to her mind. She didn't mean it. She'd fought too hard to release the world from the horror this curse would bring. But some part of her wished she could keep a scrap of this power for herself. She'd done good with it, saved Diana with it. For a brief moment, that righteous anger had burned bright in her heart, and it had belonged to no one but her. Her lungs tightened, hungry for air. Had the spring done its work? She didn't know, but she didn't want to drown finding out. She expelled her remaining breath, watched the bubbles rise, and knew which way to go. She shot upward and broke free of the river's grasp, hauling herself back to shallower water, sucking in great gulps of air.
Well?
shouted Nim from the shore, Theo beside her in the blue light of dusk. A bolt of joy. They'd made it. But...
What happened?
Asked Diana, offering Alia her hand and helping her rise.
Nothing.
Alia looked up at the sliver of moon that had appeared in the twilight sky, helplessness weighting her heart. A rumble filled the air. Alia looked to the road, wondering what fresh disaster was headed their way, but the sound didn't seem to be coming from there.
What is that noise? Said Theo.
It was coming from everywhere. She began to pick out different pieces in the roar, the punishing din of artillery fire, the thunder of tanks, the shriek of fighter jets, and screams, the screams of the dying.
Oh God, she said, it's starting.
Diana blinked, her eyes deep blue in the fading light. Her shoulders sagged, and it was as if an invisible crown had slid from her head.
We failed. We were too late.
Was it my fault? Alia wondered. Had she doomed them in that last moment, in her selfish desire to keep some of that mysterious power for her own? They stood hip-deep in the river as the sound grew, shaking the earth and the branches of the plane trees. It rose like a wave towering over them, the coming of a future thick with human misery. And then, like a wave, it broke. The sound receded in a rush, the tide retreating, and then gone. Diana's breath caught.
Alia, she said. Look.
Three figures stood by the plane tree, their bodies glowing golden in the gathering dark. Their features were indistinct, but Alia could see that one of them was a girl. Helen. The girl stepped forward, her feet light on the ground, older than when she'd been allowed to race near the banks of the Eurotas. She placed a glowing wreath of lotus flowers against the plane tree, touched her fingers once, lightly, to its gray trunk. In the golden sheen cast upon the waters of the spring, Alia saw armies retreating, soldiers laying down their weapons, crowds of angry people breaking their stride. The light faded and Alia watched as Helen and her brothers drifted away from the river until she could no longer find their shapes in the shadows. Wherever they were going, she hoped they found peace. She met Diana's gaze, almost afraid to speak.
Is it over?
Diana took a shaky breath.
I think so, she said tentatively, as if she couldn't quite believe it. We changed the future. We stopped a war.
From the road, Alia heard the cry of sirens and saw the flashing lights of police cars and fire trucks approaching. She and Diana made their way to the riverbank, and Nim seized Alia in a tight hug.
I thought you were dead, Alia said, the ache of tears pressing at her throat.
Nim's laugh was part sob.
I kind of was.
Hey, so was I, said Theo. I did some really good dying.
He also put a wrecking ball through Jason's firewall, said Nim.
Yeah, Theo said, shoving his hands into the pockets of his ridiculous trousers. I can't guarantee that there won't be some fallout at Corallus Labs, though.
Alia winced. I'm betting after all of this, the board isn't going to want me or Jason anywhere near the company. Theo's shoulders lifted.
Sorry?
I'm not, Alia said. I'll be fine. I'll build something of my own. Angry voices drifted down from the road, shouting in Greek.
Should we go up there? Said Diana.
No, said Alia. I don't think we should. Let Jason explain why he has a heavily armed militia in the middle of a country road.
What's going to happen to him? Said Nim.
They sat down beneath the drooping branches of a willow. In the dark, no one looking down from above would see them, though if anyone came investigating, they'd be easy enough to spot. But why would they? The battle had been waged on the road. There were no signs that it had spread to the river's banks, that beneath the branches of a plane tree, an age of bloodshed had been prevented.
I don't know, said Alia. I hope there's some way to reach him, to help him. I still can't quite believe that my brother did this.
And my best friend, said Theo.
No offense, Nim said, but that douchebag tried to kill me. I hope he rots.
Theo nodded.
Fair point.
Diana clutched Alia's arm. Alia, they're agreeing.
Hey, said Nim. That's true. And I haven't wanted to stab you for a solid 15 minutes, Theo.
How about now?
He asked.
Nope. How about now? Theo, how about now?
Nim grimaced. Don't worry, said Alia. Even I want to stab him. The shining scythe of the reaping moon hung low over the valley, visible once more, and they sat together, side by side, watching the stars appear and the lights of the city multiply in the distance. After a while, they heard more cars arrive and then others depart.
I guess someone is making decisions, said Alia.
How do you feel? Diana asked.
Tired, Alia said. Sad. Sore.
But do you feel different?
No, she said cautiously. I feel bruised all over and more than a little freaked out about what the hell I'm going to do with the brother you turned into a gibbering bowl of jelly. But I just feel like me.
Just you is pretty good, said Theo,
and Alia felt her cheeks go warm. Just me is pretty hungry, she said lightly. Nim flopped backward.
We don't have any money.
We'll live off the land, said Theo.
Nim groaned. Unless the land is made of pizza, you can forget it. Alia nudged Diana's shoulder with her own. I'm thinking we find a nicer place to stay than the Good Night, but I'm not totally sure how we're going to pay for it. When Diana didn't say anything, she amended, I promise we won't steal or borrow.
It's not that, said Diana. She pulled her knees up to her chin. I'm not sure I'm ready to go.
Seriously? Said Nim. I've had about enough of Southern Greece to last a lifetime.
No, I mean home. To the mascara.
Alia froze.
But you don't have to go, do you? Not right away.
I have to get back. I need to know if the island is okay, if my friend Maeve is all right.
She drew in a long breath as if fortifying herself. I need to face my mom.
Is your mom anything like you? Asked Theo.
Diana grinned. Tougher, faster, and really good at the lyre. But Alia didn't want to joke, not now. She'd already lost too much tonight.
Will you be able to come back? She said.
I don't know. I may still face exile, punishment.
Then don't go, said Nim. Stay with us. You can be my date to the Bennett prom. Alicia Allen will lose her damn mind.
Or you could be my bodyguard, said Theo. I've been told I'm not a very intimidating specimen.
You held your own with a sword for a solid 10 seconds, said Diana with a smile.
15, at least, he said. I was counting.
Why is everyone acting like this is okay? As much as Alia loved Nim and Theo, she just wanted them to shut up.
Don't go, she said to Diana. Not yet. I know you liked New York, I could tell. Even the grubby parts.
So what if they decide to take you back on Cult Island? Is that really what you want? To spend forever there?
Slowly, Diana shook her head. No, she said. And for a moment, Alia's heart filled with hope. But my family is there. My people. I can't take the coward's way.
Alia sighed. Of course she couldn't. She was Diana.
Alia rested her head lightly on Diana's shoulder. Promise me you'll come back someday.
I promise to try.
Make me the oath.
There was magic in those words. She'd felt it.
Sister in battle, murmured Diana. I am shield and blade to you.
And friend. And always your friend.
Her eyes were bright with unshed tears.
Maybe the oath didn't matter if that much was true.
I will never forget you, said Diana. She looked at Nim, at Theo. Any of you, or the way you faced the world with courage and humor.
And impeccable style, said Nim.
That too.
They linked pinkies then, Diana and Alia and Nim and Theo,
like little kids at the start of an adventure, even though they knew it was the end. Diana rose.
Now? Asked Alia, getting to her feet. Before I lose my courage.
Alia had to laugh at that. When had she ever seen Diana be anything but brave? She watched her friend wade out into the waters of the spring and slip the heartstone from her pocket, clutching it in her palm. The river began to churn, the waters turning white with foam. Starlight collected around her, bright on the black waves of her hair. Alia wanted to call her back, beg her to stay, but the words caught in her throat. Diana had a path to follow, and it was time for Alia to stand on her own. Jason had been her hero, her protector for so long, and Diana had been her hero too. A different kind of knight, one who'd chosen to protect the girl the world wanted to destroy, one born to slay dragons, but maybe to befriend them too. Diana raised her hand, her shape little more than a silhouette in the dark. Alia lifted her own hand to wave, but before she could, Diana had plunged into the whirling waters of the spring. A moment later, the river calmed and she was gone, leaving not even a ripple in her wake. Alia wiped the tears from her cheeks as Nim and Theo placed their arms around her shoulders.
You should bring friends home more often, Nim said softly.
Guys, said Theo after a minute, how are we getting back to town?
Nim shrugged. I'm pretty sure the Fiat's where we parked it.
They began to make their way to the now deserted road, Alia trailing slightly behind them. She hadn't been entirely honest with Diana. She did feel changed by the spring. Alia reached out to that dark, winged thing inside her. Its shape was different now. It felt more wholly hers, and the dagger in its hand was sheathed. She gave it the tiniest nudge. Nim's fist shot out and punched Theo in the arm.
Ow!
Theo yelped and gave her a not-too-gentle shove. Alia yanked her power back hurriedly. She was a warbringer no longer. The spring had altered the legacy inside her, but it hadn't taken everything. That strength was still there, hers if she wanted it, more gift than curse now, something she could choose to use or ignore. Make some trouble. She just might, for all the right people. She'd done good with this power before. Maybe she could find a way to do good with it again. Alia glanced back once at the river, at the silver waters of the spring, but whatever ghosts once dwelled there had gone.
Sister in battle, she whispered once more, less a vow than a prayer, that wherever Diana was she would remember those words and keep her promise, that someday Alia might see her friend once more.
Chapter 33 Diana couldn't breathe. The water had her, the current driving her forward with impossible speed. She kept her arms straight before her, her body taut as she arrowed through the dark, the rush of the water like thunder in her ears. Some part of her ached for the friends she'd left behind, trembled with fear at what might lie ahead, but she refused to be distracted. There could be no mistakes this time. She shoved all of her will into the heartstone, her only thought, home. The bright shores of Themyscira, the little cove that cut into the northern coast, the cliffs that rose above it, the landscape of her heart. Behind her closed lids she sensed light, but she could not open her eyes against the force of the water, and then, with a tremendous burst of speed, she was hurled ashore. She slammed against the sand with enough force to rattle her bones and send her head spinning. No, not sand. Stone. She was lying in the blue-lit hollow of the Oracle's temple, sprawled wet and bedraggled in the moat that ran along the bramble walls. The Oracle sat beside the bronze tripod, a slender curl of smoke rising from the brazier into the night sky. Slowly, Diana pushed the heavy tangle of her hair back from her face and rose. She didn't know what to say. It had been hard enough facing the Oracle before, but now she knew she was in the presence of the very goddesses who had founded Themyscira, who had given her a second chance to save herself, to save Alia. What did you say to a goddess when you had no tribute to offer? Maybe a simple thank you. But in the next moment she heard voices. They were coming from the tunnel she'd braved to visit the Oracle only days ago. This was inevitable. Tech's voice. We've been living on borrowed time since...
Do not say my daughter's name again, said Hippolyta, and Diana's heart squeezed at the sound of her mother's voice. Not in this place.
Let us hope the Oracle accepts our sacrifices, said another voice, familiar but less well known. Diana froze, unsure of what to do.
Hide? Face them here in the Oracle sanctuary?
The Oracle extended her arm, one long finger pointing, and Diana heard a whispering behind her. The brambles parted. She hesitated for a moment, then hooked her hands into the twisting gray vines and climbed into the wall. The brambles closed around her, but Diana felt only the briefest panic. There was something gentle in the movement of the branches now, in the way they shifted so she could turn and peer through the spaces between them into the Oracle's chamber. Diana could see her mother and Tech emerging from the tunnel with Biet, Sila, Arawelo, Marguerite, and Hong Yu, all members of the Amazon Council. It was Hong Yu's voice she'd heard. The Amazons waited in respectful silence on the other side of the moat. The Oracle rose. Her hood slipped back, revealing the face of an ancient crone.
Sisters of the Bow and Spear, have you come to make your offering?
We have, said Hippolyta. We bring you gifts and pray you find them
I will accept no offering this day.
The members of the council exchanged stricken looks. Hippolyta shut her eyes briefly. Then we've come too late. The island sickness, the earthquakes. With a start, Diana realized her mother wore the same purple silks and amethysts she'd been wearing when Diana had left. The council had been meeting to decide whether to consult the Oracle, and this must be the delegation they'd sent. That meant only hours had passed on Themyscira. If that was the case, Diana tried to temper her hope and failed. She'd been sure she would return to exile and punishment, but what if they didn't know she'd gone? She could slip back into the city and be at Maeve's bedside in under an hour.
Why did you wait so long to visit my temple? Asked the Oracle.
A crease appeared between Hippolyta's brows.
The council meeting was unusually contentious. At one point I feared we'd come to blows.
Could that have been Alia's power? Diana wondered.
Is there no way to save Themyscira? Asked Tech impulsively. Can we not?
Lightning flashed and thunder rumbled through the temple.
I have accepted no offering, and yet you dare to speak these questions?
Tech bowed her head, her hands clenching into fists. She wasn't particularly good at meek. I beg your forgiveness. I seek only to protect our people.
The thunder faded, and the Oracle's voice calmed. You need not fear for your people, Tech Mesa.
Tech's face snapped up.
Nor for the island. This time of trouble has passed. Though they held their tongues, the council exchanged worried looks, and Diana sensed their confusion. The Oracle made a disgruntled humming noise. And still you wait for explanations.
She waved a gnarled hand.
The island was thrown into imbalance by a disturbance in the world of man, but the unrest is at an end.
A slow smile spread over Hong Yu's face, and a sigh of relief seemed to pass through the council members. Hippolyta blew out a surprisingly unqueen-like breath, and Tech grinned, slinging an arm around her shoulders. Hippolyta reached for Tech's hand and let their fingers entwine.
I was so sure it was something worse, she murmured. Nothing like this has ever happened before.
Just be glad it's over, said Tech. Can you do that?
Hippolyta returned her smile.
But the Oracle spoke again.
Do not think to rest, daughters of Themyscira. I have looked into the waters and seen a battle waged in the world of man. One of your own will wade into the mortal fray to face this turmoil, a trial that will test her and decide the fate of this island and us all.
Tech squared her shoulders. Hong Yu lifted her chin. Even in her mother's eyes, Diana saw the light of battle burning. Diana wondered which of the council's great warriors would face the challenge the Oracle described.
Go now, said the Oracle. Rebuild your walls, set your cities to rights, and trouble me no more.
The Amazons made their bows and departed silently through the tunnel of brambles. Diana was afraid to watch her mother go. She wanted to run after them, offer some foolish explanation, hold her mother close. She even wanted to hug Tech. Instead, she forced herself to wait. When their footsteps had faded, the oracle turned to Diana and the vines parted, allowing her to pass from the wall.
"So you see, daughter of Earth, I have kept your secret."
Diana longed to ask why, but she knew any question to the oracle would come at a price.
"You are one of them now," said the oracle. "Battle-tested. Even if they do not know it, you do."
Battle-born at last. They would never know what she'd done, the quest she'd completed. There would be no songs sung about it, no stories of glory shared. It didn't matter. She knew who she was and the ordeal she'd faced. She was an Amazon. The knowledge burned like a secret flame inside her, a light no one could extinguish, no matter what names they called her. Diana knew that she deserved her place here, and she knew there was more than just this life on this island.
"Thank you," Diana whispered. "You took the chance, as we hoped you would," said the oracle. "We did nothing."
But that wasn't quite true. "When I came to ask about Alia, you told me I wasn't a true Amazon."
"Did we?"
"Well, not exactly, but the meaning had been clear."
"You told me I would fail." "We couldn't know you would succeed."
Realization struck Diana with the force of an unexpected wave. "You wanted me to go. That's why you said those things."
"Better to choose a quest feeling you have something to prove than to take it on as a burden. We needed a champion, and you needed a chance to learn what you are capable of."
"But I almost failed," Diana said, her mind reeling. "The world was almost plunged into an age of warfare. What if I'd lost?"
"But you didn't."
"What if I'd chosen to come back to Themyscira when you offered me the chance instead of facing Jason?"
"Then we would have known you aren't the hero we hoped for."
"But..." The air rumbled with distant thunder. Diana ground her teeth in frustration. Maybe the oracle was right. Maybe she'd needed to choose the path for herself. Maybe she'd fought harder because she'd known she had no one else to believe in her. Then she remembered Nim at the gala saying, "Oh man, do you have one of those tough love families? I just don't buy into that." "Nim had it right," she muttered.
"Oh, very well," said the oracle. "Draw closer, daughter, and never say we are not generous in our gifts."
The waters of the moat shimmered, and in them, Diana saw a great swath of green set like an emerald into the gray spires of a city. The park, Diana realized. The one she'd seen from the windows of Alia's bedroom. The image shifted and she saw a stone terrace marked by arches, a circular fountain with a winged woman at its center. Two figures sat at the edge, their faces turned to the sun.
"Alia," she whispered.
Alia was holding Theo's hand. They looked older somehow, and Diana wondered what time she was peering into, how long it had been since the fight at the spring, if all those memories had faded for them. Another figure appeared. Nim zooming by on roller skates, a pink bandage on one of her dimpled knees. She turned in circles before them, her flowered skirt flaring. She was saying something, but Diana couldn't make out the words. Another girl whizzed by on skates. She was tall and blonde with a pretty, if somewhat weaselly, face. She snagged Nim's hand, and they spun away, laughing. Theo and Alia rose, ready for whatever adventure Nim had suggested, and as Theo lifted Alia's hand to plant a kiss on her knuckles, Diana saw something on her wrist, a red tattoo in the shape of a star. The Heartstone. "Promise me you'll come back someday." Diana reached toward the water, and the image faded. Was it a promise she could keep? It seemed impossible, but she'd thought so much was impossible, and again she'd proven herself wrong.
"I miss them," she said.
Her voice sounded small beneath the stars of the oracle's sky. "They're worth fighting for."
"Princess," said the oracle.
For a moment she took a new shape, one Diana had never seen before, a soldier standing with sword and shield in hand. She wore an armored breastplate, a lasso at her hip. Her blue eyes flashed, her black hair lifted by a distant wind. There was something familiar in her features.
You will have the chance to fight for them again.
The soldier vanished, replaced once more by the crone.
Go home, Diana, said the oracle. Maeve will be waiting for you.
Grateful tears pricked Diana's eyes. Her friend was well. The oracle nodded at Diana's bracelets.
Just make sure to stop at the armory first.
Diana smiled. She thanked the oracle and hurried through the tunnel, her steps hastening, her heart full of joy. She did not know what the future held, only that the world, full of danger and challenge and wonder, was waiting to be discovered. She ran to meet it. This is Mojan Marnot. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wonder Woman, Warbringer, by Leigh Bardugo. This program was directed by Garrett Scott, executive producer Juliana Wilson. Text copyright 2017 by DC Comics. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.